Hello and welcome to another author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is delighted, as well as I, to have with us one of my favorite authors, Simone St. James.
Hi, everyone.
Whose new book is Murder Road. Before we begin, for those tuning in, the Poison Pen may have a very few numbers of signed copies left, so after you're done with today's program, if you want one, go online or give us a call at the Poison Pen, and you may be able to snatch up what is rapidly dwindling supply of Murder Road. And now I'd like to thank you for coming, and thank Simone, and we'll start with my first question.
First of all, I love this bookstore.
Thank you.
Now I said I would say it again.
Now it's officially on record. You can never
live. I love this.
My first question for you is, tell us about Simone before you became a published writer. Who was Simone?
Well, I was working an office job. It says in my bio, I worked in the television industry, and everyone always assumed that I was writing for TV. I have never once in my life written for TV, not one line of one page. I had an office job in the back office, and my job was literally budgets and Excel spreadsheets and taking numbers and putting them into Excel spreadsheets. And that was my only job, was Excel spreadsheets. So I would do that all day. It was excruciatingly boring, and I would do that all day, and I would go home at night and write my books in the evenings. And I did that for years because I wrote two entire novels that I sent out to agents and tried to get published and tried to get represented, and they were completely rejected. And then I wrote another book. I came up with another idea, which became The Haunting of Mattie Clare, which was just a book that at that point I'd been rejected for so many years. I was like, well, I don't even think that, you know, this is ever going to happen for me, but this is a story I'm really interested in, and this is a story I want to know the ending to, and I'm interested in this, so I'm just going to write it and see what happens. And then I wrote that book, and when I sent that one out, I did get an agent, and the agent sold it. But even after that, I worked my day job because the writing business is, you know, a little precarious, and so I worked my day job for the couple years after that. I think I was almost finished writing Silence for the Dead when I quit my day job. So yeah, I did both for quite a while, and it was too much to do long term, to do both of them long term. So I had to pick one. So I picked writing.
And we're very glad you did.
Yeah, so am I.
Is it fair to say we should blame Stephen King for your writing career?
That's pretty fair. Okay. Pretty fair. Read Stephen King far, far too young. My brother is 4 years older than me, so when I was 12 and he was 16, I would go raid his bookshelf. So I was reading books at 12 that no 12-year-old should be reading. My parents had no idea. They were just like, well, she's quiet in her room, so must be fine. And I was like reading Pet Sematary, like, ah! I definitely grew up on Stephen King amongst many other authors. I've been a voracious reader my whole life. But you have to remember, for those of us who are somewhat older, when we were kids and teenagers, it was before there were like YA books. It was before Harry Potter. It was before Hunger Games. It was before Twilight. It was before any of that stuff. And there wasn't, no one was writing and marketing books for young people and teens. So for a 12-year-old, there were no, like, I couldn't read The Hunger Games. It didn't exist. So I had to go read Stephen King. And so we read a bunch of inappropriate stuff, wrong ages, because there wasn't any appropriate stuff. There was either little kid stuff or grown-up stuff, and that was it. So that was mostly what I read in those years.
What can you tell us about your new book, Murder Road?
Murder Road is set in 1995, and it's about a young couple, and they're on their honeymoon. They just got married the day before, and they take a wrong turn in the middle of the night, and they're lost, and it's dark, and they don't know what road they're on, and they pick up a young woman who seems to be stranded at the side of the road. This is all chapter one, so I'm not spoiling anything. And this young woman has been stabbed, and she dies in their back seat, and they end up in this crazy amount of trouble. And it turns out the road they were on is a road that has an urban legend that there's a ghost on this road, and there's string of unsolved murders along this road for the last 20 years, and there's been bodies appearing along this road, and none of the murders are solved. And so they end up in this small town in this crazy, dangerous situation, and they have no one to rely on but each other on the very first day of their marriage. And they just end up in this crazy situation, and it just kind of, it just has a lot of twists and turns, and it goes from there. It's kind of a crazy ride, and it was a lot of fun to write. Yeah.
Why 1995?
Well, first of all, I remember 1995 very clearly. I had to do almost no research. I had to Google just a couple little facts, like what movies were out in specifically in July of 1995 and what music was on the charts. But I wanted to do a trip back in time, but also as a thriller writer, for me, I always find it more fun to write a story that's set pre-internet and pre-cell phone. And you can really put your characters in more danger that way. Like, they are truly lost. In that first chapter, they are lost. Like, they don't know. They can't call 911. They can't call anybody. She's opening the glove box and pulling out the map and unfolding it and unfolding all the squares and trying to figure out the lines and, like, in the dark. And so you can really, for me, you can really up the danger because your characters can get separated and they can't find each other. And they just really can't find each other. Or they, you know, they just can't always be in touch, or when they're trying to figure out, you know, they can't just Google things, they can't just look things up, they have to like leave and go places and talk to people and call people up and confront people. And it just, I just really enjoy going back in time for that, and just putting my characters in those situations and just like watching what they do. And like I say, it was also a nostalgia trip because, you know, I grew up on The X-Files, and I grew up on Supernatural and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and like I just kind of wanted to take a trip back to those types of shows and like the feeling you had when you were like watching a really good episode of one of those shows. Yeah.
How does someone who, by their own admission, is a fraidy cat?
Yeah, I am. I am.
End up writing such wonderfully spooky books?
Well, I write about what scares me, but. Which is everything. I should write a book about a garden shed or something. Because like, we used to have a shed in my backyard, and I would not go in the shed. But how I do it? Well, what I do is like, I try not to make it so relentlessly dark that I don't want to write it. Like, I'm dreading writing it. I'm dreading opening my manuscript. I'm dreading going to that place. I don't want, and some writers do that, and like, it's so dark and like, they're so brilliant at it, but that's just not what I want. So what I tend to do in my books is I very intentionally add little threads of humor, little zinger one-liners, characters who are kind of funny. I have scenes that I just kind of zoom out and like take a breather, and these I focus on the character interactions and their emotions, and there's something positive going on, or my two characters are connecting, or there's a little something, like just a little bit of a funny thing happening, and that just really makes it more bearable for me as the writer, and I think it makes a difference to the reader because it just sort of, it just counteracts, so it's not just so deep and dark for the whole book.
I think you're right. As a fraidy cat myself, I have to admit that I hesitated picking up your books, but they're spooky but not gory, is what I like to
tell
people.
I couldn't write gore. I couldn't write animals getting killed. Yeah. I would never be able to write that. I just can't write that. So, there are parts of my books, like just little one-liners in my books that I think are funny. So I put them in, and like that just lightens it up, the experience for me.
You also describe your books as ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of elaborate on that?
No.
There. The setting is as absolutely haunted as heck. There's no question. It's not like a is it or isn't it, or is this some other explanation? There is no other explanation in my books. It just is haunted, and that to me is interesting, and I like taking the story of the haunting of whatever it is in the book and sort of circling it into the main story, or having it like illustrate something about the main story, or even be directly connected to the main story. And I also just like For me to add the ghost story in, like, you have the realist, like the realistic storyline, and you add this ghost story, and it just ups the danger, it ups the tension, it ups the suspense, it ups the action, and then there's a whole layer of the story that I can just invent things that don't have to be realistic for that part, you know, like I don't have to be tethered to reality, and I get to just imagine something really, really scary and dangerous and just drop it in. And that just makes it a lot more fun for me to write, and makes me, you know, really challenges my creativity.
I think you're true, but what I also appreciate is the ghosts in your story. If it was anybody else, if you saw a ghost, you wouldn't want to be around. You would
right.
not stick in that place. But you give people a reason as to why they need to interact or be in that place. In the case of Eddie and his wife, it's because they'll be accused of murder if they don't figure it out.
Yeah, and they're in this town, and of course, this woman was stabbed and died in their back seat. They bring her to the hospital, and so they're witnesses, and they're also suspects. And the police are arguing amongst themselves, because there's different layers of police who are arguing amongst themselves, and they're kind of caught in the middle. And that first they get told they can't leave town because their car is covered in blood. So the police actually impound their car, take their car for a while. So they're actually stranded in town at first. And then as they're spending time there, like, they just sort of are feeling like, well, I would like to know who did this. You know, this, aside from all these other murders, like, this young woman died in my car. Like, I would like to know who did it. And I would like to, like, there's one point where April is just saying, I would like to just know the end of this story. It's bothering me that I'm never gonna, if I just drive out of town now, I'm never gonna know the end of this story. I'm never gonna know who did it. I'm never gonna know if they got arrested. I don't know who called her family, and whether her, you know, who, what her family is like, and all these things. And she just says, I just want to know the end of the story. And so they just end up drawn into it. And part of it is just because they kind of feel it's the right thing to do, to figure out what happened. And I think that happens to a lot of my characters, as they get drawn in for other reasons, but partly they just come to the conclusion that, like, this, no one else is going to do this, and I think it should be me.
One of the other things that you're kind of a master at is characterization. Mm-hmm. You take figures in the story, in the current one, I'm thinking of the B&B owner,
yeah,
who you think, basically, and this is the internet, so I'll try to be cautious, but what a bitch, you know, when you first meet her.
Yeah, she's pretty mean.
Yeah, and then you kind of reveal her life story, and she's not the person.
Yeah.
Do you always know when you're creating these characters what their backstory is, how they're going to fit? Does it involve going back and kind of revising their purpose?
Well, for my main characters, I spend a lot of time before I even start writing, before I even talk to my publisher about it, I spend a lot of time thinking about what the story is going to be. And one of the front and center in that is always my main characters. Who are these people? Why do I, even as the writer, care about them? What is interesting to me about them? And so when I start writing, by the time I start writing, I know my main characters very, very, very well. And I know their backstories. And I know that over the course of the book, that little bits and pieces of that are going to get revealed. But in the case of secondary characters like Rose, Rose was genuinely supposed to just be like a one-line character. So, like I said, the police take Eddie and April's car, and they just drop Eddie and April off at this B&B, and they're like, you have to stay here until we come for you. And so I have this scene where they're dropped off at the B&B, and the B&B owner comes out and is like, oh, like, she's not impressed that these two people have been dropped off. And that was just supposed to be it. It was supposed to be just a one-line thing. And then she came on the page, and I thought, well, what's her deal? Like, what's her story? I kind of wanted to know. And then I also thought, well, if you have a B&B owner in this small town, she probably knows a heck of a lot of gossip. And I thought, well, now I've got this character. They're on the page with this character who knows a ton of gossip. Well, what if they spent some time talking to this woman? And so she just kind of came out onto the page. And then I knew pretty early on what Rose's story was and why she's a bit mean. She has her reasons for being a bit mean. But I kind of teased that, drew that out as I wrote. But once I thought about what this B&B owner's story was, I kind of figured out what it was. And I was like, yeah, I think there's a reason she is the way she is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another two characters that are especially memorable are the teenage sisters.
Right.
And their fascination with true crime, kind of, that's a theme in some of your other books.
Yes. Yeah, so they come across these two teenagers. Again, it's 1995, so you know, it's, they're not podcast, they would be podcasters, yes, or bloggers, you know, if they, if it was today, but they aren't. They're just really weird teenage sisters who have a really weird fascination with something and they can't really tell anybody about it. So yeah, that was just, you know, I just love, I love true crime. I've written several books that were true crime mixed with the ghost story. And so I just kind of wanted to draw that element in, and I wanted to draw in, you know, I am always trying to flip expectations. Like, you have these characters and it's like, oh, they're going to talk to an expert. Well, what if their expert is a 16-year-old girl? I mean, that's your expert. And I thought, well, that makes it more interesting to me instead of like, I don't know, they're going to go to some teacher or cop. You know, I already have cops in the book. It's like, well, I don't want another cop. Like, what if your expert is a teenager? And so that's what I threw in. And that was, again, wasn't really planned until they showed up on the page. And I had a lot of fun with them. Yeah, because I was a little older than the Snell sisters at that time, but I was kind of close to their age at that time. So I kind of like to toss myself in there.
Your books are, I'm thinking it's kind of a double-edged sword, but you can correct me. Mm-hmm. You put a lot of different elements into them. There's romance, there's history, there's suspense, yep, there's the supernatural. On the one hand, you can draw from a wider group of readers.
Yes.
But on the other hand, it's hard to put you in a box, and publishers hate that.
Yes, that's true. And like, there are readers who are like, because I don't read my reviews, but usually around release time, I'll do a quick little scan and then I close the close the browser window. But like, there are readers who are just like, I love this, but like, the romance, I didn't like how that there was a romance in it. That was stupid. And then someone else would be like, I love this, but it needed more romance. And then I still get readers who are like, I really like this, but I had no idea it was going to have ghosts in it. Like, that was stupid. And I was like, like, why would there be ghosts in it? That's stupid. And I'm like, okay, well, you're reading the wrong author. And then I get other reviews that are like, I loved it, but it needed more ghosts. And so, like, it's just, I just got used to very, very early that there's a certain element you're just not going to please everybody, right? I please myself. I please my core readers. I do have core readers who, like, love what I do. And like, you can't find what I do really anywhere else, like the precise thing that I do anywhere else. And so I just kind of have to have faith in that, and I go with that. But, yeah, my publisher technically calls it, I think they technically call it paranormal suspense, mm-hmm, which encompasses some of what's going on, not all of it. So, but, you know, they seem fine with it because they keep asking me to write more of them.
I do have to say, as a side, if you're reading a book that has haunting in the title, you can kind of expect a ghost.
Yeah. And then I saw one review and it was like, well, I read her last book and it had ghosts in it. And I read this book and I didn't know this one would have ghosts in it. And I'm like, how many times do you have to read? I can't help you at this point. I can't help you. You need to read another author. I want to see that person read every single book one by one and be surprised every time. What? The last four had ghosts, but what? But, yeah, so, I mean, then that's, like, you know, you just can't please everyone. You think that's, the earlier you learn that as a published author, that you can't please everyone, the more sane you are going to be, which is not much, but more sane.
You had written something that I thought was kind of interesting. You said exploring our fears is something you can do in your books because fiction can help us navigate fear the same, yes, way it helps us navigate love, grief, anger, and sadness.
Yes, that's very true. And that's why, as a scaredy cat, like, I write these scary books because I want to, in my own mind, explore, like, what is frightening me and why, and, you know, try and face it through fiction. You know, we face everything through fiction. It's one of the main things that we love about fiction, and it's how we kind of live an alternate life and think about our own lives, but without having to directly think about our own, like, the facts of our own lives. You can kind of, the way you process it, it's just so valuable. And that's one of the main reasons I've always been a big reader, and one of the main reasons I'm a writer as well. Yeah.
You talked a little bit about your writing process, but can you kind of widen the frame a bit? And when you're starting a book, do you always know everything that goes into it? Do you, I mean, if in the case of a murder, do you know who the suspects are, who, right, the ultimate person is going to be that you're going to pin the crime on?
Yeah, so in that sort of pre-planning period, when I'm really pondering the book, and like I say, I haven't pitched it to my publisher. I haven't started writing it. I'm just thinking about whether I think this is a juicy enough idea for a whole novel, whether I want to write a whole novel about these people in this setting. So I think a lot about that. And then, so what I have at that point are what I call story questions. So what came to me first with Murder Road was that first chapter, and you have these two people and they pick up this girl and this girl dies. And that scene came into my head and I had two story questions. And the first was, what are these two characters going to do? Because I wanted to know who these characters were. And it was like, how, and you know what? It's like, if you're exploring a character as a writer, you know, the character is driving down a road and they see someone at the side of the road. Does that character stop and help them? Or does that character drive by? Well, now you've got two types of characters. So you're putting them in a situation, like how they react is sort of like really going to tell you what kind of person this is. And so I wanted to know what these people would do, which made me wanted to know who they are. And then of course the thing was, what happens next and who did it. So I don't know all those answers at the beginning. But when I decide that I really am invested and I want to write this book, then I have to sit down and like, I have to brainstorm plot ideas. Like I have to come up with the answer to the question I've asked. And I go through like any number of brainstorming ideas that I throw away, and I go through a whole bunch of them and I think about it for a while. But I do come up with just a very high level answer of like what the answer to the mystery is. But I don't outline chapter by chapter. I don't know everything that's going to happen. Like I said, I wrote Rose and she showed up on the page and like suddenly I found her interesting. So I didn't outline that. But I know when I start writing and when I'm like talking to my publisher about it, like the very high level what the answer to the mystery is. And so where this is all going toward the end. But I don't know anything about how it gets there. And so I explore that as I write. And sometimes I write, like you're not reading my first draft. Like I write scenes that don't work. I write characters that don't work. I write, you know, stuff that's too long and too repetitive and I have to cut all that out. So I really am exploring as I go. And that includes sometimes like editing and deleting and revising and all that stuff as I go through it.
You've written a number of books. Has it gotten easier or is every book a unique challenge?
No, it has not gotten easier. You would think it does. There's always a point right in the middle of the book where you just completely despair. you start with the book and you're excited about the idea. And I'm excited. I'm like, oh wow, I love these characters. I love this setting. And I start writing it and I get halfway through and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. Cause I know the beginning and I know the end, but I don't know how I'm getting. And then I go, how did anyone think I can do this? I don't know how to do any of this. I am a complete fraud. And there's this whole crazy period in the middle where it's like, it's over. Everything's over. And then I go back to the manuscript and then I finish. So every time, you know, like every time. And at this point, even I recognize, I'm like, it's over. And I'm like, okay, I just got to wait a week or whatever. But, So that happens every time. And then once I finish the book, I've spent so long on it and I've spent so long in this world that I have a brief period where I never want to look at that book again. Right. Like if you've ever done a long project that took a long time, you got to the end of that project and you're like, oh my God, never again. But I do come back around after I've had some time off. I do come back around and then I can go back into it and revise it and do whatever needs doing. And I like it again. So all that craziness happens every time. You would think that it would just become, but maybe if all that craziness didn't happen, it would be a boring job. So I don't know. I wouldn't know.
There's more, especially today, to writing a book than just putting the words on the page. Mm-hmm. There's what happens afterwards, mm-hmm. the cover, the title, marketing it. Murder Road is, I think, very conveys the whole story in two words.
But yeah, the whole story.
But when it comes to your titles and your covers, how much input do you have?
I have a lot of input. I always have a working title for my book as I'm writing it. I think most authors do. You have to call it something. And then when it comes time, you know, after the whole thing's over and your publisher is looking at like the marketing aspect of it, and they'll look at your title and it either works or it doesn't, because they have different considerations than you as the author do. Like, for example, The Sundown Motel, my working title was Night Shift because it was about a woman working a night shift. And we got to the very end and my publisher was like, well, Stephen King has used that title. Yeah. Charlene Harris has used that title, and Nora Roberts has used that title, and they were kind of like, you're kind of screwing your own book if you're if you think you're going to compete against all three of those with that title. Like, maybe we come up with something unique, and like Sundown Motel, no other book has that title. So, you know, the creative person comes up with what they think is interesting, but publishers have different, they look at it from a different angle, and an angle of people actually buying your book, which is the whole goal, even for the readers. Like, they want readers to find it. So I will say, though, that The Haunting of Mattie Claire was my title. The Book of Cold Cases was my title. The Broken Girls was my title. So it's not like I have no say. Like, I wrote The Broken Girls, and that was my working title through the whole book. And we got to the end, and I was like, I love this title. And they were like, I love this title. No one else has used this title. Done. And it was great. So, like, sometimes, yeah, I do have input. But the publisher will sometimes, you know, like I say, have different considerations. Murder Road, we had to brainstorm it. I can't remember who, I don't think it was my title. We brainstormed a ton of titles for it, for this one. But sometimes my titles get through. Yeah.
You've been writing a number of years now. You've hit the bestseller lists.
You have?
What have you learned that you wish you could go back to when you were first starting out and tell yourself, you need to know this about publishing and writing?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I think that I would tell myself that it's worth doing because, you know, especially as a beginning writer, I had so many years rejected, and I kind of wanted to tell a story and I wanted to do it, but I had like just so many years where it was like, if I just quit, no one would notice and no one would care. And even, you know, those first few years as a published author, like I didn't, you know, my first books did not hit bestseller. Like, my very first book did not hit a bestseller list. You know, like, I had to build my readership over time. Some authors are like, they sell a book and they sell it for seven figures and it's already being made into a movie and all this stuff. And that was not how it worked for me. I had to build over a period of time. And so even like those first few years, it was like, well, you know, I could just, you know, like, not do this and no one would care, you know, and I did keep doing it. But I think that what I would tell myself is that it's still worth doing, you know, even if you have 500 readers or 400 readers or 1,000 readers, like, it's still worth doing, you know, and I think that I would just reinforce that to myself, because there's just like, this is a tough business and there's a lot of self-doubt coming up for sure. Yeah.
Is it more the journey than the destination?
Yeah, and it's about the storytelling, and it's about the creativity, and it's about you telling the story that you want to put on the page. And, you know, without so much thinking about, like, when you're, you know, I don't think about covers when I'm just coming up with, like, oh, what are these two people on this road going to do? Like, I'm not thinking about what cover will be on that. I don't think that, right? So I'm thinking of story. You're just thinking about story. You're just thinking about these characters and this story, and I'm going to put this on the page. And there's, you know, that's exciting to do. And exciting to finish a book at all, whether it never goes anywhere. It's pretty exciting to do.
You may say that you weren't acclaimed early on, but didn't your first book win an award?
Well, it won the Romance Writers of America Reader Award. Yes. I mean, yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, I have no complaints. And certainly it sold enough copies that my publisher kept wanting me to write more of them. Like, it wasn't like it was like horrible or anything. I'm just saying that it wasn't like a big splash, you know. And you had to build it. I had to build the readership.
It wasn't a Rebecca Yarros or any kind
of
thing.
Exactly. Okay. It wasn't that.
let's switch gears and talk about Simone as a reader, because you've mentioned Stephen King.
Yep.
Do you read what you write? Do you read all over the map? Do you not want to read scary things? What is your journey as a reader been like?
I don't read a lot of thrillers in my day-to-day, partly because I want to keep my ideas fresh, partly because, you know, if I'm going to write a thriller during the day and then every evening read a thriller and then write, and like, it's been like a decade now, like, I, you know, I can't just do one genre. So I read all over the map. I read everything. I read romance. I read YA. I read nonfiction. I read fantasy. I read everything. I read mystery. I don't always read something that has to do with what I'm writing. Like, I just let my brain kind of just go. Like, we were just talking about how I read that The Wager. Which was, you know, like it's just about like a shipwreck in the 1700s. It's nothing to do with anything. It's just it was just something to read, and just don't get shipwrecked in the 1700s. Very bad situation to be in. I do not want to be one of those guys. But so yeah, I read everything. I go on Book Talk. I read whatever's Book Talk is talking about. I try everything. Like, I'm trying. Like, well, everyone's talking about this book. I'll try it. Some of them I like, some of them not so much, but I try them. So, yeah, I try everything.
Is it fair to ask you if something's coming from you?
Yes, I am working on the next one. I don't have a title yet, and I don't have a date yet. But I'll just say that it's about three siblings, and their little brother vanished 20 years ago. And in this book, they have to go back to the house they grew up in and figure out what happened to their little brother once and for all. Wow. And I spent all winter working on it, and it is in the works. Don't be surprised if there's a ghost in it. Please don't write a bad review if there's a ghost in it.
How can readers learn more about your books? How has social media impacted you as an author?
I'm very selective about my social media. My biggest following is on Instagram, which is great. So I'm on there mostly because that's where I have the most followers. That's just Simone St. James. Facebook page is Simone St. James. My website is just simonestjames.com. I made a TikTok account. I've got like 100 followers on there. I never post anything. But I made one.
You should. You're very funny.
Well... Yeah, maybe I should. Yeah, I should probably post more. But I did post on release day.
That's important. I think we'll go ahead and take a pause and take some questions from your readers.
Sure.
Okay. Any questions for Simone?
How did you choose the setting for your books, and have you ever been to any of the settings for your books?
This book is set in Michigan. Which was funny because I've had readers like who are from Michigan are like, why'd you pick Michigan? And I'm like, well, it's not very far drive from where I live. Also, upstate New York is not a very far drive from where I live, which is why Sundown Motel is set there. So yes, I have been to Michigan and I have been to upstate New York. And I choose them. I don't know. I choose them. Sometimes it just sort of bubbles up as part of the story. You know, The Broken Girls is set in Vermont, and that was the first book that where I'd moved over into a U.S. setting, and I was like, well, there's tons of places in the States that are really haunted, but like, what's a haunted place? Well, New England is really haunted. So I just was like, let's go to New England. Let's see some hauntings. So, but then sometimes I like to be, you know, a little off the grid. Like, no one thinks of Michigan as a really haunted place, you know, like, as the one, you know, you think New Orleans, you think all these great places. But So I thought, well, I want to be a little bit different. So like, I just said it in Michigan, and because I've been there a number of times. So, I just, it really comes down to the story, and sometimes it just sort of suggests itself. Yeah.
Other questions? I think we'll take.
Oh, yeah, sure, I can repeat the question. Yeah, what do I do between books to relax? Well, I love to travel, and my husband and I both love to travel. So that's, and we will take like a trip, and everyone will always be like, well, is it a research trip? And it's like, no, it's just a trip. I just spend time with my husband going to see things. So we do love to travel. And between that, in between books, I read a lot. And like I say, I will just read a bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with anything I'm writing completely. You know, I'll go read a bunch of YA or something. And that's just for my brain just sort of takes a nice vacation when I just do that. Or just read a bunch of romance books. That's always fun.
Other questions?
Mm-hmm. But do you respect the power of some supernatural? You write it to such understanding.
Yeah, do I believe in / respect the existence of the paranormal? Yes, I have never encountered a ghost or anything like that, but I do believe it's possible. I absolutely believe it's possible. I believe most things are possible. And I know that a lot of my readers have lots of experiences and lots of wide variety of beliefs. And I think that And a lot of times my readers come to me with their ghost stories, which is always fun. I love to hear a ghost. I love listening to a ghost story, obviously. So, but I do believe it's possible. I just really do. And I think that's part of the reason I'm a scaredy cat, because I believe, if I didn't believe it was possible, I wouldn't be scared of it.
Other questions?
Well, I have to imagine first that when you get the first copies, it has to be thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
But how long does it take from you finishing to it being on the bookshelf?
Oh, yeah. How long between when I finish the book and it gets to the bookshelf? Usually in the ballpark of a year, because I finish it and my editor gets it and she goes through it and we do go back and forth with her revisions, and then it goes to another round of, goes to copy editing and it goes to proofread. It goes through several rounds of editing and then they have to print it. So it's usually a year, sometimes longer than a year from the moment I finish it to when it actually comes out in the store. Which is why, like, this book is out now, but like I'm already partway through the next one because I finished this one over a year ago. Yeah.
Other questions? Way in the back.
So for you and all your books, which book was it where you went, aha, I know what I'm doing. This is the book where I feel like, yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Which book did I write where I felt like I knew what I was doing? No, I know exactly the question. My writer friends and I have a term for this, and we call it a gift book. Because it's like you're writing a certain book and you're like, it just arrives in your brain and you're like, why does everyone complain about writing? It's so easy for me. And then the next book, you're like, oh, right, that's right. So I would say the first gift book I had was Silence for the Dead. Silence for the Dead was like, I could see that book playing out in my head, and I was just writing down what I saw. Like, it was a movie in my head, and I was just writing it down. I was like, I couldn't write fast enough to write that book. Sundown Motel had a lot of moments like that. Sundown Motel had a lot of moments where, when I was writing it, I was like driving by myself to the grocery store, and I was all alone in the car, and I just suddenly was like, oh, that. It does that. That's what happened. And I was like just yelling to myself in the car, and like it was just kind of like, because it was just the plot points were just popping up in my head. And so you do have those. Those are great moments. Those are really, really fun moments to have. And you know, you have other moments where you just got to sweat it out and revise it until it works. But sometimes you get those moments where it just pops in. So those are two that were, I really had the most moments while writing those books. And this book as well, Murder Road, was a lot of fun for me to write, which it isn't always like, it is work, it's hard work. And so there was parts where I was just getting up and opening my manuscript, and I was like, what are these two going to get into now? What am I going to do to them? What are they going to do? Oh, they're not going to like what's happening to them today. So I had a lot of fun writing this one for sure.
Other questions? I think that lady there.
Okay. I have a question about your re-releases.
Yes.
Because I kept thinking I was getting a new book, and I was like, oh no, this came out a long time ago, and it's one of your original books.
Right.
I was just wondering if there was a specific reason that drove that, because I know it's too, like, the covers are more cohesive with your newer books and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was just asking about the re-releases of my older books. It really just was, they just updated the covers, and I loved my old covers, but like, you know, though they're 10 plus years old now, so it was just kind of like my publisher kind of decided it on their own. I'd always said to them, like, if I could wave a magic wand, I would like make really cool new covers for those books. And then one day they decided to do it, and they did such a great job, and they made those covers, the new covers, look new and fresh and modern, but like still really true to the books. And the colors really pop, and they just did such a great job. And so they were already going to redo the covers, and they were just kind of like, well, why don't we just like put out a new edition? Because so many new readers have discovered me in the last couple of years. And like, we still get like people who are like, think that like The Broken Girls is my first book, and like that's not really hard information to find, but if you don't go, I guess they just don't go looking. So it was just a way to just get those covers really in front of the eyes of readers who didn't know that I had those older books, and it's worked really well. They're really gorgeous covers. I love them. Yeah.
Other questions?
your editor and publisher. So other than them, do you bounce ideas off, like, with your husband or like any
mm-hmm.
other friends?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question is, if you had to choose one of your books to be made into a movie, mm-hmm. which would that be?
Okay. So the questions are, which book do I think would I like to be made into a movie? And also, do I bounce my ideas off anyone other than my editor? I do sometimes brainstorm ideas with my husband. He is not a writer in any way, but I will just say, like, what if they had a story and that happened? And he goes, no, he'll just be like, that sounds boring. I wouldn't read that. But, like, that's just his first, like, as a reader, that's his first, you know, his first reaction, right? And, like, I don't always take it as gospel, but he likes to bounce ideas around. I do have my writer friends who are my little circle of writer friends, and they will read. I do bounce ideas off them, and they will read usually a very early draft of my books, and they will give me the honest answer of, like, here's where it drags, here's a character I didn't like, you know, or the stuff they like too, or, like, you know, I get that expert opinion when they're like, well, if I was writing this, I would add an extra scene that had this, this, and this in it. So I do have writer friends that I bounce my ideas off of, for sure. As far as getting a movie made, I mean, nothing is in the production stage. Various ones have been optioned, which just means, like, they just sort of, like, reserve the book, and, like, you can't sell it to anybody else. And then they reserve the book, and then they have to go and try and, like, get funding. And we just had the pandemic, and then we had a big strike. So it's, like, it's already a really long process for anything to get made, and a very risky process, but it's even more so in the last 5 years. So nothing is in production. I guess probably Sundown Motel would have to be the one, because, like, I just get so many readers who are like, I would love to see this as, like, a Netflix series or Netflix miniseries or yeah. And that one's been optioned at least once, maybe more than once. And people, like, production companies have tried to get that going. And, like I say, there's just been so many roadblocks in the last 5 years, but it's not, it could happen. It could happen. Yeah.
Other questions?
What's my favorite book that I've written? I don't really have a favorite. They're all different. My children are all different. let's see. Well, I mean, Sundown is a pretty special book. Sundown Motel is a pretty special book. I kind of knew it when I was writing it, like I said, and readers really responded to that book. And it was such a treasure for my, for my career. So that book is pretty special, but, you know, my older books, you know, they get enough love. I do love Lost Among the Living. That was like one that, like, not everyone read that one. And, like, oh, that's a good book, everybody. And I was in love with that hero for the whole time I wrote that book. I was nuts about him. And, Silence for the Dead, which is set in the 1920s haunted insane asylum. I mean, it's a haunted insane asylum. I mean, that book scares everybody. That book scares everybody. It's so scary. So that's a pretty special book too. Yeah.
Gentleman in the back.
Oh, first of all, I love your shirt. That is the coolest shirt. He has for the online people, he has a Salem's Lot shirt. have I ever, like, discarded something from one book, an idea from one book, and, like, picked it back up in another book? Not that I can think of. I can't think of anything specific that I've done that. I mean, I'll kind of, when I'm thinking about settings, like, I'll kind of go through a couple of settings and be like, oh, maybe here, and then I'll end up on a setting, and then maybe a future book will be in, like, one of those settings that I discarded. Characters, no, I've never discarded a character and then reused them in another book. But settings, I probably have come up with settings and decided it wasn't right for this particular story, and then come back. And it's funny, because when I first pitched The Broken Girls, and I said to my editor, I'm thinking about writing about a haunted girls boarding school. And she said to me, oh, you've been wanting to write that for years. And I said, I have? Apparently I had mentioned it to her at some time before, and I had still have no memory of this. And she's like, oh yeah, you should write that. You've been talking about that for a long time. I'm like, I have? Are you talking about me? So apparently, I guess maybe I do have ideas that are tucked away that I bring out, but I just have no recollection of it.
Other questions?
Do I have plans for more short stories or novellas? I would love to do more short stories or novellas. Ghost 19 was my novella that only came, because it's shorter in length. It only came out in ebook and audio and not in print. And that story was just like, I wrote it, and I actually wrote it a couple of years ago, and I hadn't quite finished it, and it's just, that is how long the story is. Like, it's a very weirdly, like, if I'd made it into a novel, it would have been really draggy and bloated, I think. And so I was just like, that particular story is that long, and I just wrote it, and I hadn't quite finished it. I had a bunch of deadlines, and then actually what happened was during the pandemic, when everything was locked down, and I went into my hard drive, and I was like, I still have this story, and I knew in my head how it ended. So, and I had a bunch of time in my hands, so I sat and I revised the whole thing and I finished it. And then I still didn't do anything with it. And then a year or two later, like, I said to my agent, I said, I have this thing, like, it's just this weird length, and it's not really a novel, and I don't think it can be made into a novel. And she's like, well, send it to me. Like, you know, we'll read it. I'll tell you whether it's any good. And she's like, no, this is really good. So we ended up putting it out. And I loved writing that shorter format. A ghost story, you know, there's a very long history of short ghost stories as short stories and novellas. Ghost stories lend themselves to that tight, tight format. You can do just one setting, one character, you know, and like, that is what that novella is, this woman who's like got agoraphobia, and she's in her house and she's looking out the window. And so it really lends itself to that short format. So if I had the right idea, I would absolutely write more of those.
Yeah. Would you ever put it into print?
Well, that's up to my publisher, and they were like, I guess they don't really put novellas into print. I don't know.
Yeah, they do.
You would know better than me. Yeah.
Someone should talk to your publisher.
Okay. I'll go argue with them about that one. But if I wrote another one, they'd put them together into a volume. Okay, I'll get on that.
Way in the back.
What have I learned about human nature from writing my books? I don't know. I don't know if I'm an expert in human nature. I just write. What I see in my thoughts, but I don't know. I just try and observe closely, and then I try and put what I observe into my books, and I try and to be empathetic about it. I think that's...
Well, I think if you're looking at your writing as a reader, I would say what you can tell is that people are not what they first seem like.
Yes.
There's always layers.
Yeah, that's for sure. People, and you know, people are not just one thing, you know, they're not just one thing. And someone that you think you understand, they might have a whole story that you haven't heard about them. Yeah. And that's just something that I've always noticed about people. And so I try and put it in. I think what comes through is I try and put a lot of empathy into my books. And even people who aren't doing good things, I, the writer, have some empathy for the fact that they're making bad decisions or they're not doing the right thing, because, you know, everyone's struggling. So I think that might be something that comes through, and I think that's something that people connect to when they read it.
Other questions? No, Patrick, do we have any online questions? I've surprised him.
Online questions? Well, it's funny because you've kind of gone through and answered almost all the ones that they're asking as well. There is a question about, you know, who are some of your favorite writers?
Yeah.
And did you have any real kind of inspirational authors?
Oh, okay. Yeah. My favorite writers. I mean, I have I think every diehard reader in this room is
like... If we have copies in the bookstore.
What's that? Oh,
bonus
yes.
Bonus points if we have them.
Okay, so Tana French is one of my favorite writers, and you're reserving a copy of her new book for me. Well, I still do love Stephen King, but I have a wide variety of favorite writers. I love Emily Henry. I love Leigh Bardugo. I love, who else do I pick up without even thinking? Donna Tartt, but she writes one book every 30 years.
Do you like all of her books?
Do I what?
Do you like all of Donna's books?
Oh, you know, you have to work hard to like all of
Donna's
books. I
love Secret History. I hated The Goldfinch.
Oh, you got to work hard to love The Goldfinch. The Goldfinch doesn't... The Goldfinch
I'm not
doesn't...
working that hard.
Yeah, I know.
Either entertains
you
me
have
or
to
doesn't.
Put the work into like that book. But, you know, she. I don't even know if she'll ever write another one at this point. Maybe not. Yeah, those are some of my top favorites.
Aren't you a big Mary Stuart fan?
I'm a big Mary Stuart fan. Those classic old books, for sure. I've read Dracula probably 10 times or more, in every format. Audiobook and everything. I love that book. That's one of my favorites. One of my all-time favorite books is Dracula. That book is nuts. It's so good. What else do I read regularly? I don't know. That was a pretty good list.
It was.
Do you have a favorite character in Dracula?
Do I have a favorite character in Dracula? Dracula.
Himself? Yeah, okay. Of course.
He's a vampire. A spoiler.
I thought you were going to say Renfield.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Well, Renfield is pretty terrifying, but...
A question about how long does it usually take you to write a book?
How long it takes me to write the book... I have my long period of noodling on it, but the writing usually takes about a year. And like I say, I'm going through and I'm changing and I'm revising. Like it isn't just like, and I write my books, in sequence. I start at page one and I go to the end. Even the books that I wrote that had dual timelines in them, I wrote those those chapters in sequence. I didn't write like one timeline and then another timeline and then mush them together. I wrote, you know, the past, the present, the past, the present, the past. I wrote that in sequence. And like, I just, that's how you can see in those books, like the chapters kind of intertwine with each other because that's how it was coming out in my mind. So there's a lot of revising. That isn't just drafting. There's a lot of revising in that year, but it does take me about a year.
Is it challenging because now expectations are authors can turn a book out every month and you're writing on a much slower?
Yeah, it is a bit challenging, but my publisher has been very, very supportive for the last 5 years. Like they've been, when a publisher sends an author out on a book tour, like that means the publisher is like, you know, really backing that author, and they've been really good to me, and they've been, you know, just whatever I want to try and whatever the schedule works for me to get these books out. I think they're just pretty, they've come around to being like, if this is going to be what gets these books out, then this is what we'll do. So they've been really supportive.
I think it's important for readers to understand too. Writers need as much time as they need.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, rushing it doesn't make a better book. I'll tell you that much. Definitely not. And there was like when I first started out, the contract was for one book a year. And those were 1920s set books, and I had to do research for those. So I would be writing, like drafting one book while I was editing still revising the previous book and while I was researching the next book. So I was always working on three books at the same time and trying to keep them all straight in my head at the same time. And that for me just wasn't like, I did it for a while, but it was not sustainable like as a long-term thing. And you know, different writers have different, the way their brains work is all very different. So some writers have no problem with that and they turn out great books every year. There's lots of writers who do turn out a great book every year. And I could only do that for a little while. And then I also in the beginning of that, I had a full-time job. So, I was kind of cracking up there. And so I was like, I have to focus on the writing. And then I had to figure out what schedule worked for me and then just go with that. Yeah.
Any advice for aspiring writers?
Advice for aspiring writers. My number one piece of advice is always finish the book or the story or whatever it is. Finish it. Finish it, finish it, finish it. Because I get, you know, aspiring writers come to me and they're like, well, should I indie publish? Should I go to a publisher? Should I get an agent? And it's like, are you done this thing? And they're like, no, I've written like three chapters. And it's like, no, because finishing it is a big milestone. First of all, it's a massive achievement to finish anything. And then also you can't market or pitch unfinished work. So you have to power through and rely on your own creativity and get to the end of that piece and get to the end of it. And then you know you can do it. And like there's this weird mindset change when no matter what happens, you know you can do it. So then you can do it again. And then you know you can do it again. You can do it again. So my number one piece of advice for aspiring writers is always finish it. Finish the book or the story or whatever it is. And then when you get, you just get to that mindset after you finish it where you're like, okay, I've done this. I could do this again. Like, it wouldn't be easy, but I could do it.
Do you have a number of, like, early manuscripts that will never see the light of day, or?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I do. I have several rejected manuscripts from, like, full, complete books that from my, you know, that from the beginning, my years as a beginning writer. And they weren't, like, awful, but they're not publishable. Like, I was a beginning writer. I was learning the ropes, and I would say the biggest problem with those early books are that they were imitative of other writers. You know, like I was reading other writers and I was like, I want to do that. So I was writing something that was like very clearly like a lot like other writers and not my original voice yet. So I was learning the craft, but I was not relying on my own original voice and ideas yet. And I think that's something that a lot of writers go through early in their career. You're reading, like you're being influenced by other writers. And for a while you kind of just make stuff that's a lot like that.
Was there a point where you said, I like this. This is my own voice is emerging here. Do you remember a specific?
Yeah, and it was when I came up with The Haunting of Mattie Clare, which was a weird book that was like part ghost story, had a romance in it, wasn't horror, wasn't gory. No one else, it was very gothic, and no one else was really writing that. And I had come to the point where I was like, well, this is what I want to read. And that was the point where I was like, well, I'm not relying on other writers. I'm not writing like other writers. I'm not writing to a certain market even. And this is just what I want to read. And so that was what sort of made that book really work in my mind.
All done with online?
That's all I got.
Any other questions before we let Simone go? One last question.
You said you like watching true crime. Do you also watch ghost hunting shows?
Do I watch ghost hunting shows? Not as a regular thing, but I have enjoyed those. I have enjoyed ghost hunting shows. Do they still make them? I must still make them.
I think there's a whole channel dedicated to
that. Okay. Well, I don't have the channel, but I do. That is one type of, you know, I can watch those without getting too freaked out. Those are just entertaining. Yeah.
I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Virtual audience, thank you for tuning in to another author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. Thanks, Simone, for being with
us today. Thank you for having me. Thank you all for coming. Thanks for the great questions.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.